The current stats, wind southwest at 10. We have some sunshine now, 49 degrees for both Kenosha and Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It's 10 past 8. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And on today's morning show, we are going to be talking about the matter of starting one's own business and what is involved in that, just what kind of an undertaking we are talking about. And what sorts of things need to be thought about at the outset? What sort of potential problems need to be avoided, if at all possible? What sort of planning needs to be done? What sorts of things can one not really plan for? What sort of surprises do you have to try to be prepared for? It's all laid out in a really interesting book called The Starting Blueprint. And by the way, a blueprint is spelled B-L-U-P-R-N-T, the starting blueprint, what you can expect when starting your own business. The author of this book is Joseph Tenuta, and Joseph Tenuta happens to be a faculty colleague of mine at Carthage College. He began teaching there on an adjunct basis in 2017, became promoted to full-time in 2021, and currently he is the chair of the management major and director of the healthcare administration major at Carthage. So he is involved in a couple of different aspects of what goes on at Carthage. And he has written this book in part from his own professional experience and expertise. And at one point writes, I wrote this book because there are so many people, especially college students, that have so many great ideas but do not know how to start. And goes on to say, I wish this book is a tool I wish I had had back in 2005 when he undertook some of his first commercial ventures. Joseph Tenuta, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here.
Likewise.
I think ahead of our conversation, since this is your first visit to the morning show, it would be good for our listeners to learn a little bit about you, and I hope you don't mind me mentioning the fact that the name Tenuta is famous in the city of Kenosha, but you probably, right at the offset, need to make a distinction between yourself and the Tenutas that is on 52nd Street.
Certainly. I will say I love that store.
probably love the name, too.
Love the name. It's very common. It's nice because it's one of the names in town where if you give it, no one needs to know how to spell it. They know how to spell it.
Right.
To your point, our family is fairly new in the States. My mom and dad and oldest brother came over in the 60s. Ironically, not at the same time. My dad had come first with his parents and a few siblings. Set up shop here, got jobs, factory jobs, labor jobs. Worked, saved enough, went back to Italy, married my mom. And then he came back by himself. And it wasn't until, I want to say if I do the rough math, 18 or so months later, that my mom came with our oldest brother. And then they went on to have four more boys, and here we are.
Yeah. Quite a story.
Yeah, it's interesting because I look up to my dad quite a bit, and I often get, you know, you mentioned, I should mention this. My wife and I have five kids. Both have careers, both ambitious, and we often get the how do you do it, right? But I look up to my dad a lot because it was the essential immigrant story came with nothing, worked whatever he could, and he physically worked at two different factories and then at a restaurant, and 6 days a week, often 7, 12, 16 hour days. And when I look at my time schedule, if you were to plot it out, in today's world with virtual meetings and not having to drive everywhere, we can do a lot more than we think we're able to. My dad had to physically drive to a factory, clock in, go to the machine, set up, and then leave, and then drive somewhere else. So
yeah.
There was a lot of that time where, if you're smart about it, you can really handle a lot.
Well, that's, of course, one of the things that's often involved in undertaking a business, and especially a small business where you're nearly the entire workforce or big, big part of it, and one needs to know about the kind of gauntlet that we're talking about. It might be also helpful for our listeners to get some sense of some of the professional ventures which you yourself undertook as a young adult. And because, of course, the experiences that you had, the successes and the not-so-great successes that you had in those ventures has a lot to do with what you have written here. And you probably would not be able to write a book as comprehensively helpful as it is if you hadn't had some of that real-world experience to share.
So being a Kenosha native, it's many Kenosha people will say this, it's a wonderful community, and it's hard to leave. And those who leave have a tendency to come back. I went to engineering school at the Milwaukee School of Engineering, got my degree, ended up as a manufacturer's rep where I covered the state of Wisconsin for roughly half the state of Wisconsin for roughly 13 years. And I was in mechanical rooms, to really make it simple. So boilers, all that kind of stuff. Right around the time my second daughter was born, the company I was with moved me from salary to full commission. Right. So
not fun.
But it really changed me, because where I was kind of comfortable getting a paycheck every 2 weeks, now that wasn't the case.
Right.
And I really needed to, if I wasn't out there working, I wasn't, you know, providing. So it changed the behaviors. It really made you look at your time, how you're spending your time, the value of your time. And I did that for 13 years until I was approached with an opportunity with my oldest brother to build a company, in a healthcare company based on physical therapy.
And doing exactly what? I mean, providing physical therapy?
So, right, opening clinics and creating a profit center, if you will, from the back office. Typically, the billing and collecting was left to the back room. It was an expense. We wanted to make it a profit center. So he gave me an opportunity to work with him, which I did. And I got to preface this. I've had a lot of good people give me opportunities. You know, my parents started with the foundation, you know, the work hard, the mentality, the discipline, the integrity. But then I've had some really good bosses. My first job, when I was a sales engineer, he took a chance on me. When my brother gave me this opportunity, he took a chance on me. So I had a front row seat and a hand in very big decisions that were being made. Very big, you know, risks that he was taking. So having that opportunity, I really learned a lot, and I stored that information. The clinics were sold in 2021, and that's where I went on to do various other ventures, if you will, and Carthage being one of them. But being able to have work at Carthage, but then the autonomy to kind of pursue different ventures, I find is a blessing. And I got involved with a startup called TRT Speech Labs, where we're creating a web-based application for speech-language pathologists so they can better detect speech deficits. That started grassroots efforts, friends and family funding. We took third in the Wisconsin Business Plan governor's business plan contest this past summer. So there's a lot of opportunities out there, and I wish I could show your listeners a visual, because I have a picture of all the ideas that failed, all the ideas that I've had that, you know, one day made sense or I really thought it had legs, but didn't, and whatever money was spent or time is lost. But those ideas kind of that failed still gave me the opportunity to work, learn from them, and keep going. Yeah.
Love the way you put that. And actually, we get a sense of some of that in your book, that those kind of life lessons are also a part of this. It's not just, well, you got to fill out this form and you make sure you have this much capital and so on. You know, this is also about knowing what you want to do and the way you want to make your way into the world. Could you just say a word about teaching?
Sure.
And what kind of took you into that direction?
It was 2017, and well, I'll take it a little further back. When I was a sales engineer, we were to give these things called steam system seminars, right? So we had a demonstration room in Illinois, and it was my job every so often to bring customers in and teach their fitters, their technicians, the nuances of dealing with the steam system. And I did well at those. I then would do them in hospitals on site. I remember going to the Train Corporation in La Crosse and putting on a two-day seminar. So I had a kind of, I wouldn't say a knack, but I wasn't afraid to get in front of an audience and kind of speak to what I knew. It was 2017, and I, for some reason, I don't know what it was, I looked at the website for Carthage, and lo and behold, adjunct opportunity in the management program. I said, I'll try it. I met with the chair at that time, Jan Owens. We hit it off. She said, I think you would be good to teach in our adult undergraduate studies program at night, if you would give it a shot. It was 6 to 9 one night a week. So I went to my wife. We had a discussion. We said, we could do it. Why not? Try it out. And I told Jan, yeah, let's do it. I was given a textbook and a syllabus and said, here you go. Coincidentally, she connected me with a mentor. And that mentor was also an adjunct at the time. And he was the guy that introduced me to my partner at TRT Speech Labs. Yeah. And I taught the next semester, I should say the next 7 weeks, because they were 7 week sprints.
Okay.
Then the next 7 weeks. And then I was asked, would you like to teach operations? Sure. Would you like to teach management principles? Sure. Why not? Can you handle 2 classes? Sure. Then we went through COVID. And we were teaching virtually in my basement, I remember teaching. And what I learned is that I really liked working with young people, working with students, and influencing them into a good path of working hard, starting your business, pursuing a career, going to graduate school. I found fulfillment in that more than I thought I would. So when the opportunity came up to go full-time and really work with an undergraduate population, I jumped at the chance, and it's been rewarding since. I think I like it a lot more. It's a long-winded way of saying I like it a lot more than I thought I would, and I get a lot out of it. And part of how you open the show is I'm very transparent in my classroom. They get to know about my family. They get to know about what my wife does, what my kids do, their names. I'm an open book. And I tell them I'm still in the business world and I'm still learning. I'm still falling on my face. And I share those experiences. So they responded by, hey, I do graphic design and I want to do like logos for companies. How can I do that? Or we want to start up this kind of data analytics group. You know, what are your thoughts? And I thought to myself, there's really nothing there that could help these students kind of, not with all the answers, but at least some of the foundational ones that you would need to get that enterprise off the ground. In the book, I left a checklist at the end of every chapter. So
right.
You can make it.
I remember that.
You can say to yourself, okay, all right, I need to get, you know, I need to talk to an attorney, or I need to get my EIN number, or I need to write, you know, get an email address or a logo or something. So you can track it, not just read it and put it on the shelf.
Right.
Yeah.
And by the way, we should mention that please accept this in the spirit that I'm giving it to you. This is a relatively small book, which
yeah.
I think is a positive.
Right.
I mean, because, you know, you can go to a bookstore and see, you know, big, thick books that are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages long. And, you know, that just, you know, if I were somebody starting a business, it would be kind of daunting to think about, you know, plunging into a big, thick book.
Right.
And trying to digest everything that's there. And this, in a sense, is lean and mean. It's condensed and focused, and if one wants to explore it in more expansive fashion,
sure.
Absolutely fine. But, I mean, I think it goes back to what you said about you crafting a book that you wish you had had once upon a time, and apparently that kind of book was not going to be 400 pages long,
no.
But, you know, something that you could perhaps even read in one long sitting.
Yeah.
And when somebody is about to take on something like this, that probably makes a really big difference.
It does. And I have to give some credit here to my kids, because I see what my kids are doing. High school students, college students, newly graduated young professionals, right? They learn different. You know, my phone was on the counter years ago, and I loved diving into a book, and I loved perusing Barnes & Noble.
Mm.
If I was making sales calls and there was a Barnes & Noble in between, I can go there and
sure.
Sit there 30 minutes or an hour. I think younger people today learn different. They learn by watching videos. There's a lot of instant gratification on the phone. So if I wanted to kind of connect with them, it would be very hard to give them, like you mentioned, you know, a novel that's, one, hard to carry, daunting. So that was one of the reasons why I wanted to keep it just very simple.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Joseph Tenuta, who is a member of the management faculty at Carthage. And also the author of a book called The Starting Blueprint, What You Can Expect When Starting Your Business. And we're going to dig into a few particulars in this book in just a moment. If you don't mind, I want to just ask you a quick question about this matter of the healthcare administration major at Carthage, and you are the director. And that seems like an especially complicated sphere in which to be doing some of this. Could you just say a word about just how challenging healthcare administration in and of itself is, and the kind of the ways in which you are trying to help people navigate that really complicated system?
Sure. Well, it started when I became full-time faculty. One of the things we're kind of given to do is develop new courses or develop new programs, whatnot. And as I mentioned, my brother gave me an opportunity to be part of a physical therapy company.
Hmm.
And it was a baptism by fire where I had to quickly learn and understand and learn how to navigate things like claims and denials and submissions and appeals and credentialing, contracting. A lot of real technical kind of aspects that are particular to healthcare. So when I got to Carthage, I learned, and I don't think I'm going on a limb by saying this, but there's a lot of silos. You know, everything,
right.
There's school of business, school, you know, everything's siloed.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare is something that can really break that silo. And I'm a product of sometimes being in the right place at the right time. When I was hired on and in my full-time faculty training, a wonderful woman next to me, Nancy, she's the director of the nursing program.
Mm.
We were in the same group, same cohort. We shared the same ideas. We hit it off. I consider her a friend more than a colleague. And she's a wonderful person. We got to thinking. I said, you know, there needs to be like an introduction to the business of healthcare course. And I set out to do that. And we got it approved. I taught it. And it was a future student that called in and said, I want to self-design a healthcare major, a healthcare admin major. I don't want to be clinical, but I want to be able to work in a hospital. And I said, why can't we do that? So I leaned in on some of the faculty there from Allied Health and nursing. And we were able to take a lot of the courses that we already have and create and business courses and create this major. And as I promoted it and I'm kind of going about getting the word out, talking to the people here at Aurora and at Frederick South, some other companies in town, and even City of Hope, we're learning that they want students that can come out, or new grads, let's say, and understand, they might be a finance major or maybe a healthcare admin major, but they understand what finance is. They understand what revenue cycle is. They know what claims are. They understand, or at least have had exposure to insurance companies and what that means. So the learning curve becomes less for them as they get there. And from a community standpoint, if you look at our community, I think education is still the number one employer around in Kenosha County, with healthcare being the second largest employer, and logistics is coming up as the third. I think I'd have to confirm that with CABA. But healthcare is not going away. It can provide a fruitful living. You can do well in the healthcare world. And regardless of what the economy does, healthcare is very inelastic, which means it doesn't go up and down with interest rates. It doesn't go up and down with election cycles. It doesn't matter. If you're sick, you gotta go to the doctor.
Right.
You're going in. You know.
Yep.
If we all know, if you have a toothache, you know, you're willing to give up your left arm to fix that toothache.
Sure.
So it's very inelastic. When you have an industry like that, it provides opportunities to have a career. And if we can provide that training for young students to get in there, who don't want to be clinical but want to be in that space, it's a win-win.
Sure.
Yeah.
And of course, when we're talking about something that matters so much in people's lives, but also an arena in which there are various pressures and lots of challenges and so on, it must be really gratifying to think about training people to be ready for that and able to function and flourish in a space like that. Because you're right. I mean, we will always need healthcare. It
right.
will always be a part of things. And yet, it is not an easy arena or landscape to navigate for any of us, certainly as patients, and for those who administer it. I just can't even imagine how complicated it gets. And so you need to be training people who don't just memorize a bunch of facts, but
correct.
Are creative and imaginative and ready to do what has to be done.
If I can add one thing, I mentioned that we used existing courses, which is great. But we did create a practicum for your senior year where you will be working at a partner, where it could be a hospital, it could be a company, and you will have real world experience that last year. So you could be potentially at a hospital where you're doing maybe several weeks in credentialing, several weeks in clinical services, several weeks in scheduling. And you do this round robin the whole year. And just that alone, I think, is going to set us apart, because you still have to train a new graduate. You still have to train a new employee, a new entry employee. But walking in and saying, yeah, I've spent a year circulating around a hospital, I think makes the graduate stick out a little bit. Right? And it could be a feeder to these hospitals that are looking for people already. Yeah.
We're talking with Joseph Tenuta, and now we're going to start digging in very specifically to the new book that he has written called The Starting Blueprint, What You Can Expect When Starting Your Business. One thing I wanted to ask you about that you say very early on is, I hope the pages ahead, meaning the pages of your book, inspire you, meaning the reader, to finally pursue a passion, follow a dream, serve others, or build something of your own. I thought that was interesting because I think some people might write a book and really think, this is for somebody who is already wanting to do that, and this is how you do it. And but you know, clearly your purpose is a little bit larger than that, because you also seem to think that somebody just by reading this book will find some sort of inspiration to undertake this. Talk a little more about that and how that folds into what I assume is more of the kind of the central purpose of the book.
Right. I'm glad you caught on that one. There is a maybe a hope that I have, or an underlining kind of aim or goal, is that someone would read it and say, you know, I've been wanting to start my own cake company or cupcake company forever. I'm always the one that provides them for birthday parties. I'm always the one that they call on. Why am I not doing this full time? Why am I not, you know, pursuing this? What's holding me back? Complacency is a killer. One of the things that I tell my students, especially if I'm teaching a senior thesis, where you do have a cohort of young professionals that have one foot out the door. So you have to make sure, one, you got to keep their attention and stuff. And I tell them, what you do between 5 p.m. and 12 a.m. every night in your 20s, will define your 40s. Don't let school stop you from learning that you're out. I'm not saying don't live your life or anything like that, or don't enjoy things, don't go on vacation. You have to, sure, do that. But if it's coming home and sitting down and kind of just letting Netflix take over, and that becomes your routine, that's complacency setting in. And those dreams that you had, those things that you've always wanted to do, become harder and harder and harder to do. But if you spend that time kind of reading a book like this, doing some research about something, going to another course, something that says, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. You know, that's a goal of mine. I'd rather have people excited about what they do, love what they do, passionate about what they do, because I think that transcends it. I think their families are better, their communities are better. They're happier when they're happy.
Of course.
Right?
Absolutely. And more apt to be successful, I should think. And yeah, it's just really interesting to think about, again, this is a book where you don't go on and on saying, you know, if you have a passion, you should follow it. Blah, blah. I mean, we don't see a lot of those kind of words in your book. I think what you're saying is, by just the simple fact of just making it seem doable.
Yeah.
For someone who already has this passion but has maybe already decided, oh, but I couldn't do that. I don't know anything about that. It's like, you could do that, actually. So you haven't, I guess I'm really intrigued and impressed that you haven't written this book overtly as a cheerleader, and yet that was kind of at the heart of much of what you were writing. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. I think that is one way to think about this book and the impact that it could potentially have on a reader. You do say this is not a promise nor a blueprint for success. So,
correct.
So you're saying that you're acknowledging the fact that there are a lot of things that have to do with there are a lot of things that can interfere with the success. There are no guarantees in this, and nevertheless, if it's something about which you feel really passionate, people should go for it.
Right. I mean, it's really, and I said that with almost like a disclaimer, because as I mentioned, dealing with a lot of college students and young professionals, they're inundated with these types of videos and reels that say, you know, I'm 22 years old, I own an Amazon where they refurbish things and sell them online, and, you know, I make 10 grand a day, blah, 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 blah. To me, that's a lot of nonsense. anybody, if you look around this community and you talk to people that have, you know, made established businesses, they've sold businesses, they're pillars of this community, especially of the business world. If you
sure.
ask them, they'll tell you in the beginning you're working your butt off. In the beginning you're pulling your hair out. You're worried. There's a lot of risk. Hard to sleep. I think those are the types of lessons that people need to hear. So there's no promise to this. There's no promises at all. Nothing's promised. Tomorrow's
sure.
not promised.
Right.
But your chances are better if you show up every day and you work every day.
Yeah. Well, and you say something really interesting very early in the book when you say it takes a certain type of person to push through being overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And man, is that true. And certainly I think both of us as teachers at the collegiate level see that all the time, that there are a lot of things about being a college student that can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
And some students come to those challenges, you know, with a lot of tools to kind of work through it, and others need some help, really need some assistance. And it's probably helpful for somebody who's thinking about undertaking something like this to maybe figure this out about themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, are they the kind of person apt to be go running the other way screaming when things get overwhelming, or do they have sort of the personal fortitude, if that's what it takes, to push through that,
yeah.
to be relentless?
There's a lot with that statement. I think everyone has a bandwidth for sure. I tend to defer back to how my dad handled things. He and I have five kids. He had five kids, right? And my dad always put us first, and he always showed up. And that taught me a lot, that even if you're overwhelmed, showing up, you're going to have good days, bad days, but showing up every day, working every day, really does, in the long run, pay off. I think what's also helped me, and what I mean by it takes a certain kind of person, many people try to digest a problem in one bite. Sometimes you have to sit back and think, okay, little by little, how am I going to get through this? What's this first few days like? What's happening? What can I handle right away? And then you start breaking problems or challenges down until they're more manageable. And over time, if you do that, you tend to find yourself being able to handle being overwhelmed. Especially if you work full-time, have a full-time family, have a mortgage, and you want to do something, you will be overwhelmed. There's something's got to give.
Yeah, there's something wrong if you're not.
There's something wrong if you're not. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you're thinking in those early days, this is a lot easier than I thought it would be, the chances are you are not doing what you need to do. You do share a intriguing statistic that really surprised me, and I want to make sure that I understand it, and I want to make sure I wrote it down correctly. I'm pretty sure you said small businesses make up 99% of the businesses operating in the United States.
It's crazy.
I would never imagine that.
People never imagine that, but
I have a feeling that there are a lot of things that maybe we don't think of as small businesses. I mean, I think most of us think of a small business as, you know, like the donut shop, your cupcake shop you were talking
shop.
About. Right. And of course, small businesses exist in all kinds of different places and levels, and many of them, in a sense, invisible to the naked eye. I mean, they're not going to be on a Main Street storefront.
No, there's not. There's, we're looking outside your studio. That facility there could be a small business. You know, if they has 100 employees or less, or I think the Small Business Administration classifies a small business as 500 employees or less. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's the metric. So to you and I, if you were the owner of a company and you had 450 employees, you would say to yourself, this is a big
office. Yeah, of course, absolutely.
Right?
Wow.
But in the big picture, when you look at major corporations, they're small. So I tell my students often, the odds are you're going to be working for a small business. That's for sure. Truly, Yeah, they're the holy grails of the tech, Silicon, the Google of the world and whatnot. But odds are you're going to be working for a small business. So it's important to kind of know what went in to get there.
Yeah. And in a sense, what you are part of. Yeah. And again, some small businesses are really small in every sense of the word, although they, you know, chances are they'll be a big part of your own personal mm-hmm. life. And then, of course, as you're just saying, small businesses can be on a bit grander scale than that. And it's also important for us to kind of understand that.
And it's important to know, too, that stat also takes in consideration the solopreneurs, the companies that are one person, sole member, LLC yep. type
yeah,
venture. That it could be they're employed by a big corporation, but they also have this company kind
right.
of thing. So
a lone massage therapist.
Right.
And so okay, let's talk about some of the specifics that you get into, and we'll be, of course, just touching on these, and people are of course welcome to seek out your book to explore these in more detail. And again, for those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Joseph Tanuta, a member of the faculty at Carthage College, about his book, The Starting Blueprint, What You Can Expect When Starting Your Business. And actually, right off the bat is a chapter or section of the book in which you talk about three main building blocks. Do you just want to quickly outline those for us?
Yes, I can.
And I want to say also, you get into all kinds of other things like insurance, liability, money basics, branding, matters of media, and lots of specifics. It's really, really quite interesting. But where do we begin?
So the three building blocks is the mission, the vision, and the core values. The mission is why you are doing what you're doing, right? Why are you setting up this enterprise? And there are likely to be listeners out there that are saying, well, I just want to start a cupcake company, right? I don't need a mission like CVS. I don't need a mission like Google does, right? But you do, because why are you starting this enterprise? Are you there to bring joy to people one bite at a time? Are you there to, you know, be part of people's lives by providing, you know, there's a reason why. The vision is how you're going to do it, right? I'm going to do it because it's going to be a state-of-the-art facility, whatever we're going to do. We're going to create a center of excellence. How are you going to do it? Why you're there, and how you're going to do it? The core values are important because that's how you function. This isn't where let's just throw some signs on the wall, you know, hard work, teamwork, and not live those core values. You
yeah.
have to have the way you function established, meaning I put five core values in mine. Humility, consideration, transparency, hard work, and continuous improvement. So everything we do is based around those five things, right? Hard work, you got to work, showing up every day, right? Continuous improvement, you got to say, what can I be better at? You have to be humble to say that. You have to be humble to say, hey, great. What can I do better next time? Next time I come in for an interview, what can I do better? Right? Consideration. That is being considerate of others. That's how I function. And transparency. I think in the business world, people tend not to share things, or they don't want to, you know, tell their boss, hey, I messed up. There's a lot of caveats there.
Yep.
I think it's better to be transparent. I say limit your core values to about four or five. Don't put 17.
Yeah, right.
You can't do it.
Yeah, they
kind of
get
the ones that are most important.
Yeah, they kind of get lost. Yep.
Yeah, and what you find out is that the employees that share those values, because a lot of the values I shared with you just now are kind of like personal values of my own, and the employees that share those same values tend to be the employees that you really don't have to worry about working well with. You
right.
just naturally do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You devote a chapter to branding and another chapter called You Got Mail, in which you talk about the significance of communication, saying communication is key. In that chapter, you tell a story about one of your first ventures back in 2005 and a mistake that, I mean, that's how you regard it now, in a some kind of a side hustle, I think is maybe the way you termed it, but and it had something to do with pushing promo products to local businesses. And as you talk about this, it looks like page 49 or so is kind of the heart of the story, but you say something about how what you did wrong had to do with not knowing your market, not knowing your target, who you needed to be connecting to. We don't have a lot of time, but maybe you can just briefly kind of sketch this story that you take the time to tell in your book.
Yeah, so there was, as I mentioned, I was a sales engineer. I was sent off to various trainings and whatnot, and I got my first Padfolio, and I saw the name of the manufacturer embossed on it. I said, I can flip these, I can turn these around. And I set up a little LLC, and I found did some due diligence, and I thought, hey, I'm going to be able to sell these products, so I should just be able to email and, hey, I'm selling these now. And all of a sudden, the orders are just like, cascade in.
Mm.
And it was a complete fail. And I have to give, I had three customers, and they were all three of my brothers. So it's so nice of them to help me out. But it was really me not knowing that if you're going to start something, you have to do some due diligence and understand what market you're going to go in.
Right.
You need to understand if you're going to have a buyer.
Right. Is this needed? This needed? Is this wanted? And boy, I find in many, many spheres, it is really easy to jump to the wrong conclusion about that and to jump to the rosiest conclusions when, in fact, maybe the reality, the facts don't bear that out.
Right. And I always say, and this is another lesson that I learned. It's always good to have someone, whether you have a partner or your spouse or a confidant or a mentor or somebody, they have to take the rose-colored glasses off of you. Because many entrepreneurs, many people with a great idea get excited and they pursue it and they get into this world of it's going to be huge, it's going to be great. You need people, and luckily for me now, I realize I have such a support system between with my spouse, my brothers, and colleagues, that they'll take those rose-colored glasses off and say, "This is what you got to consider. Have you thought of this?" And then you're like, and that's probably saved me quite a bit.
Wow.
Yeah.
In another chapter called "Sell, Sell, Sell," right around page 58 of your book, you kind of flip on its head a little bit. A phrase that gets bandied about all the time: the customer is always right.
Right.
And you like to say, I believe that is half the case. The right customer is always right.
Correct.
What do you mean by that?
I think it was Einstein that said, if you judge a goldfish by its ability to climb a tree,
it's a failure.
It's a failure. Right. The right customer is always right, meaning I often teeter, and I say this in my classes, I like to refer to the people I do business with as clients as opposed to a customer. Hmm. A customer seems very transactional, right? If you do own a restaurant, you're going to end up having customers because you may have somebody from out of town. They come patron your place. They have a good time and they leave. You may never see them again. Clients, I believe, are people that you're going to or looking to have a relationship with, right? And a relationship works both ways. Where I remember as a sales engineer, I had contractors that they knew that if they needed me, I'd be right there, right? But I also knew that I can charge them for my time. I'm not gonna be nickeled and dimed. I'm not gonna be questioned. They're gonna give me an opportunity to bid on things. So we had a mutual relationship. If you have a customer that's kind of always grinding on you and beating you up, and you're constantly getting beaten up, eventually you got to say, well, that might not be the best customer for me. So yeah. That's not the right customer.
Right, yeah, and you shouldn't adjust what you're doing on the basis of a customer like that. Yeah. That's really, really good. I want to say in the chapter called The Starting Blueprint, you go through things like different types of corporations and the way in which a corporation is a legal entity and the kind of legal matters that need to be addressed and whether or not you need legal counsel and so on. You have a whole chapter just devoted to some of the basics of insurance and liability, some money basics, and so on. Circling back to, I think, the first full chapter of the book, at one point, this is on page 11, I think you ask someone who is thinking about undertaking this to ask yourself why. And I think you tell the person to ask themselves that question 5 times.
Right.
Explain why this is an important question and why it's important to pose it to yourself not once or twice or three or four, but 5 times.
I took that 5 whys. It's actually a method of root cause analysis.
Hmm.
So the 5 whys or the fishbone diagram, what went wrong and how are we going to get there? The 5 whys is it's a method of really trying to boil down why you want to do things, why you want to venture in. Is it because you want, you think you're going to become a millionaire? Is it because you want to help people? Is it because you've had a passion for a certain hobby? You got to boil yourself, you know, why? And if you do that and you can end up, and you can be honest with yourself and get to what I would say the root cause or maybe the foundation, then you're starting to build something on some bedrock. But if there's really nothing substantial there, then you got to question, should I really go down this road? So you got to ask yourself with why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and depending on what the answer is, then that's a clear signal to perhaps move forward or to pull back for a better time. And there's so many things, of course, to think about. And again, I appreciate the fact that in a book that is modest in length, in fact, how many pages are we talking about? I meant to make a note of that.
70.
Yeah, 70-page book. Lots of stuff packed into it. But again, this is not a time-consuming slog. And if you want something that is quick, to the point, clear, wonderfully organized, and very well written, then this is the book for you. Joseph Tenuta, if people want to lay their hands on The Starting Blueprint, how can they get this book?
They can go to joeytenuta.mba, and there's a link right to the Amazon site.
Ah,
yep.
Very good. Joseph Tenuta from the faculty at Carthage College, it's been great to meet you and to talk with you about your really interesting book. And even though I have no immediate plans to be undertaking a small business of my own, I really found it fascinating to explore, and I can well imagine it being a great help to a whole lot of people. So thank you for writing the book, and thank you for being my guest today and talking about it.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, we will be previewing the upcoming holiday concerts of the Bell City Brassworks with their director, Doug Johnson. Tomorrow as well, I hope we'll be talking about the upcoming Candlelight Christmas concert at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Racine, which is coming up this Saturday night. On Wednesday, Debbie Slevin, author of Unpregnant Pause, Where Are the Babies?, which is a very thoughtful exploration of why fewer women are choosing to have children or choosing to have fewer children than was once commonplace. On Thursday, Kaylin Palomares pays her monthly visit to the program with two of her colleagues from Racine County, Chad Sampson, Land and Waters Resource Manager, and John Grove, Conservation Specialist. We will talk about what is conservation. And on Friday, Jessica DeBoer talking about the upcoming Sing-Along Messiah performance coming up this Sunday evening, December 15th, at First United Methodist Church in Kenosha. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Our forecast today is for mostly sunny skies with a high temperature of 52 degrees. Cloudy overnight, down to 28 for an overnight low. Tomorrow, Tuesday, cloudy and colder than today with a high tomorrow of just 33 degrees. On Wednesday, there is a 40% chance of light snow with a high of just 28 degrees. And Thursday's high under sunny skies, 14. We will warm up just a little bit over the course of the weekend. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine